ago. Okay, we're on Daf Tesma Beis, two dots on the top. Now, if you remember in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel taught us that that even b'svarim lohetiru shekasvu al yevonis, that even by the sifarim of Tanakh, I should say by the Sifrei Torah, I should say, you're only allowed to write in yevonis. Because remember, we saw Rabbi Huda's opinion in the Gemara is even Rav Shimon Gamliel only allows you to translate the Torah; he doesn't allow you to translate in the Neviim and the Ksuvim. And so that's the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. And so the Gemara says, Amar Rav Avohu, Amar Rav Yochanan, halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Avohu said that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. This is what Rav Yochanan taught. My time of the Rav Shimon Gamliel. What's the rationale of Rav Shimon Gamliel? Why can you only translate into Greek? Now you remember, we learned on the Omer Aleph that it happened, they translated into Greek because of this business with Talmai HaMelech. Remember, right, the Septuagint and that in the translation. But what enables them, why is it from the Torah's perspective that you could translate into Greek and not any other language? It's not just because it happened that way, but because Amar Kra, Yaft Elohim Liyefes V'yishkon Bo'al Eshem, that Dvariv Shel Yefes Yiyu Bo'al Eshem, that the words of Yefes, Yavon is a descendant of Yefes, right, so he finds himself in the tents of shame, that's in the tents of Torah. The Ema Gomeru Magog, so why only Yavon? Because there are other descendants of Yefes also. So why only Greek? If you go in Yefes' family tree, you could find other languages too. Somewhere of Chiyabaraba, Hainu Taima Dechsiv, Yaft Elohim Liyefes, Yafuso Shel Yefes, Yobi Oleshim, the finest of Yefes. Finds itself into the tents of shame, and that the Gemara is assuming is Greek. You get the impression from the Gemara that halachas like Rav Shimon Gamliel, we're not supposed to be translating Torah into other languages, right? Even Rabbi Huda's opinion that this is only Torah, and the other Sifrei of Tanakh you can't, and the other Sfarim you can't. Generally speaking, when you look through the Rishonim and Achronim, they suggest a number of different rationales why we don't like to translate Torah. So one is that you lose in translation. You know, when you read in the original Hebrew, there's a nuance that's involved. You know, when you read the text of the Chumash, so you see how from the nuance in the text developed all sorts of different perushim and concepts, ideas that when you read in translation, you just don't pick up, right? In fact, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is, you know, we just had a Sar Bateves, you know, just recently. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch is, the Torah writes this also, that this business with Talmai HaMelech happened on Ches Teves. The rabbinic tradition is that happened on Ches Teves, and Ches Teves used to be a fast day. That's what it said. That's halach and Shulchan Aruch. That's the halach and Shulchan Aruch is that Ches Teves was a fast day because of this translation. It was seen in the eyes of Chazal as a very, very bad thing. Sometimes we think that the translation is amazing. You go over, you pick up, we have a translation, and everything is translated. And in the eyes of Chazal, it was a very, very bad thing. They established a fast day at the translation of the Torah, and it appears from this Mishnah that it was very negative attitudes towards translation in general. In fact, if you're interested in some really some curious literature. So if you open up the Art Scroll Shas, I don't know if it's printed in every volume, or maybe it's just in the beginning, in the first volume of Brachos. But if you look at the Haskamos, the approbations in the beginning, you'll see that some of those Haskamos over there, they write things sort of like, I don't really know about this whole translating the Gemara deal. You know, if I remember correctly, even I think it's Rabbi Schechter from Chaim Berlin. I think that in his Haskama, he writes that they shouldn't call it a translation. They should call it a Perush. No one should think that this is the only way to understand it, and people will think that this is the Gemara, when really you lose a lot in translation because you have to pick different Perushim, and you have to, so they should call it a Perush. I don't know what they actually called it, and I don't know what it says on the front. And we'll look later. But translation, while very, very useful, is also seen a little skeptically in the eyes of Chazal. There is a clear preference for learning the original. Certainly when you're talking about the Torah, the Ramban writes that the whole Torah is the name of God. Although when you read it in translation, obviously it doesn't come out that way. But when you learn in the original, so the Ramban thinks that you're constantly being involved in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's all sorts of different reasons why the Rishonim and the Achronim seem to indicate that Chazal were not very fond of translation. I'm not talking down to translation, don't get me wrong. I'm just pointing out that it might not all be rosy, because that's what it seems. Good. Let's move on. The Mishnah says as follows. Ein bein koin Mashiach. I'm sorry, koin Mashuach b'shemen amishcha l'meruma begadim. There's no distinction between a koin who becomes the koin gadol by having the shemen amishcha, the oil poured on him, or the koin who becomes the koin gadol by wearing the big day kahuna of the koin gadol. Right, the koin gadol wears 8 garments. The regular koin wears 4. You can become the koin gadol in one of 2 different ways. You can become the koin gadol by being anointed with the oil. You can become the koin gadol by just wearing the koin gadol's clothes. So the Mishnah says there's no distinction between the koin gadol became the koin gadol by being anointed, or the koin gadol became the koin gadol by wearing the garments ala para ba kol hamitzvos, except for one exception, and that is if the koin makes a mistake. He rules there's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos what the mistake is. According to Rashi, he gives a psak halacha, and other people make a mistake in halacha. They do something they're not supposed to do based on his ruling. That's what Rashi says. Tosfos thinks that that's not right. Tosfos thinks that what's really going on here is that he does something wrong, not a mistake in ruling, but he does something wrong that requires him to bring a korban, so he has to bring this special korban, right? The parabah kol mitzvah is what the Mishnah here calls it. So the kohen who's mashuach, the kohen who is anointed, he has to bring this korban if he makes this mistake. But the kohen who's just meruba begadim, the kohen who just becomes the kohen gadol by putting on the begadim, he does not have to bring this korban if he should make this mistake. The Gemara will explain why this is true. Ein bein ma kohen mishamish l'kohen sha'avar. There's no difference between a practicing kohen gadol and a retired kohen gadol. We'll see the difference between these two in the Gemara. The Rashi over here explains that if for some reason a kohen gadol can't serve, let's say you have a kohen gadol and I don't know, maybe he becomes tameh or something like that, so now he can't serve in the Beis Hamikdash. So they used to appoint somebody else to be the replacement kohen gadol. So then when the first kohen gadol was ready to come back, you know, to service, so now you have two guys who are the kohen gadol. So the second guy is forced to retire. The first guy goes back to his post. Now the Mishnah is saying there's no difference between the first guy and the second guy. They're both like the kohen gadol. Ela par yom kippurim v'asira sa'efa. Except for the par on Yom Kippur. You remember the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur has to bring a par for his family. So you only do one of those. If you have two guys, they don't get to both bring that. So only the first guy gets to bring that. The second guy doesn't. And Asira Sa'ifa, every day the Kohen Gadol had to bring a Korban Mincha. He brought his own personal Korban Mincha, a flower offering every day, and there were not two guys bringing that. There's only one guy who can bring that every day. So when the first guy comes back, so he brings it, and the second guy does it. That's what the Mishnah says. Let's get into the Gemara. We'll explain some of these concepts. Hola Inyan Par Yom HaKippurim V'Asira Sa'ifa Zeh V'Zeh Shavin. The beginning of the Mishnah said that there's no distinction between the Kohen who is anointed with the Shemen or the Kohen's Meruba Begadim, except that, except if he makes a mistake, the Par HaBa Kol HaMitzvos, right? So then he doesn't have to bring that animal if he's only Meruba Begadim. So the Gemara says, oh, so that means that he does both. The guy who's Meruba Begadim and the guy who's Mashuach with Shemen, they both have to bring the par on Yom Kippur, and they both have to bring this Korban Mincha every single day. Now the Gemara says, Masnis into Loki Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah is not like the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Do you Rabbi Meir? Because if it was Rabbi Meir, Atanya Meruba Begadim may be par Abba Kol HaMitzvahs. Rabbi Meir, says that the Meruba Begadim, the Kohen Gadol, becomes the Kohen Gadol by wearing the garments. So he does bring the parabol kol mitzvahs. If he makes a mistake and other people sin based on his psak, according to Rashi's reading, so he does bring this korban. That's Rebbe Meir's opinion. It's against our Mishnah. The Chacham say he doesn't bring it. My time with Rebbe Meir. Why does Rebbe Meir think he does? The Tanya Mashiach, the pasuk in describing the bringing of this korban, uses the terminology of describing the kohen as ha Mashiach. So ainly ela Mashiach b'shemen. If the Torah would have just said Mashiach anointed, then I would have said only the one who's anointed with oil. But HaMashiach, once it adds the Heya Yediyah, so then that adds Meruba Begadim Minayin Talmud Lomar HaMashiach. So that when it adds the HaMashiach, so that's coming to tell me that it's not just the one who's anointed with oil, but also the one who is Meruba Begadim. So now the Gemara says, hang on a second, but Mayu came to the Loki Rebbe Meir. We just said that the Mishnah is not like Rebbe Meir, because the beginning of the Mishnah said that the Kohen who is Meruba Begadim doesn't bring the par should he make a mistake and other people sin on because of his ruling. So the Mishnah is not like the opinion of Rabbi Meir. But Ema Seifa, the end of the Mishnah says, Ein Bein Kohen Mishamish Lakona Sha'avar. There's no difference between the practicing Kohen and the retired Kohen. Ela Par Yom HaKippurim V'Asira Sa'efa V'Hola Chol Divrayin Zev Ezeh Shavin, except for bringing the Korban on Yom Kippur and the Korban Mincha every day. But in all other regards, they're both treated like the Kohen Gadol, us and the Rabbi Meir. That is Rabbi Rabbi Meir's opinion, because there's another machlokus. Titania, irabo psul uminu kohen acher tachtov. If the first kohen gadol should develop some kind of psul, so he cannot serve right now as the kohen gadol, and so we appoint the second kohen gadol in his stead. Rishon choser lavodaso, and the first guy comes back, so he goes back to being the kohen gadol. Sheni komitzes kuna gadol alav de Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says the second guy, we still treat him like a kohen gadol, so there's still some differences, but we treat him like the kohen gadol. So the end of the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir's opinion, as opposed to Rabbi Yossi. Omer Rabbi Yossi says Rishon Chosel Avodaso Shenion Eino Roy Lo LeKohen Gadol VeLo LeKohen Edyon. Rabbi Yossi says when the first guy comes back, the second guy is stuck. We can't treat him like the Kohen Gadol, and we can't treat him like a regular Kohen. He's stuck. So it's Rabbi Meir's opinion who says that the second guy is still treated like the Kohen Gadol. He can't bring the Paran Yom Kippur. He doesn't bring the Mincha every day, but he's still treated like the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yossi says that we can't do that. So the end of the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir's opinion. So what the Gemara is really asking is the beginning of the Mishnah, we said, cannot be Rabbi Meir. But the end of the Mishnah clearly is Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara answers, no problem. Let me finish the point. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Maisab Rabbi Yossi ben Ula Mitzipori, Shira Bopsul. Once upon a time, there was a Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yossi Bar Ulam, from the town of Tzipori, and he developed some kind of psul that he couldn't serve as the Kohen Gadol. Minu Utachtov, they appointed somebody else to serve in his stead. When he came back, they came to the rabbis and they asked, what should we do? They said he should take his post back. The second guy, he's stuck. Not the Kohen Gadol, he's not the Kohen, not the Kohen Hedyot. Kohen Gadol Mishum Eva, he can't be the Kohen Gadol because we can't have two Kohen Gadols, because then they would fight. That would be bad news. Mishum Eva, they would fight. You can't have two Kohen Gadols at the same time. It just doesn't work like that, right? Kohen Hedyo Mishum Malan B'Kodesh V'im Moriden, and we can't put him back to being a Kohen Hedyo, because once he ascended to be the Kohen Gadol, we can't send him back down to the minors. We can't do that. So that's Rabbi Yossi's point. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's not a problem. Reish Rabban and Sefer Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi Amar, Rabbi Hivin Asiv La Aliba De Tanai. Right? They say, yeah, it's okay, it's fine. So the beginning of the Mishnah is like the Rabbanan. It's not like Rabbi Meir. And the other Mishnah is like Rabbi Meir. It's okay. It's fine. The Mishnah is allowed, right? And that's what Rabbi Yosef says, that when Rabbi took the Mishnah, so he ruled in one machlokas against Rabbi Meir, and a different machlokas like Rabbi Meir, and that's how you end up with the Mishnah, which is comprised of various different opinions. The beginning is against Rabbi Meir, and the end is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Let's keep going. The next Mishnah says like this: Ein bein bama gedola lebama kitana. Okay, we have to define a few terms here. A bama is an altar that you bring sacrifice on, not in the Beis HaMikdash. So a bama ketana is your private altar, like in your backyard. There's very few times in Jewish history that you're allowed to have such a thing. But you're not allowed to do that today, by the way. Don't do it. But that's a bama ketana. A bama gedola is when we had like a central place to bring korbanos, which was not the Beis HaMikdash or not the Mishkan in Shiloh. So when the Mishkan first came into Eretz Yisrael, it was in Gidon, Nov, it was in different places. So they had a communal place for sacrifice, but it was not the set standing Mishkan. So that's called a bama gedola, the big communal altar, which is not the Mishkan classic or the Beis HaMikdash. So there's no difference between a bama gedola, the communal altar, and the one that you build in your backyard, ela psachim, except for the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach, you could only bring in the communal one. You can't bring a Korban Pesach in your backyard. Zach Klau, this is a general rule. Koshu nidev v'nidev karev bevama, v'koshu eino lo nidev v'lo nidev eino kar bama gedola. Here's the general rule. Anything which you have to pledge to bring, you promise to bring a Korban, that you can bring in your backyard, in a bama ketana, when a bama ketana is allowed. But something which you have to bring that you don't pledge to bring, meaning something which you are obligated to bring, that you can only bring on a bama gedola, that you cannot bring on a bama ketana, that you cannot bring in your backyard. The Gemara explains, Psachim v'sulo, is Korban Pesach really the only difference, right? What about, you know, other offerings? Psachim is the only one. So the Gemara says, no, it means ke'ein psachim, right? It means things that are like Korban Pesach, meaning anything which you're obligated to bring, which is not optional. Anything which is optional, you can bring in your backyard. But anything which you're obligated to bring, like the Korban Pesach, so that you could only bring in a bama gedola. Mani, and whose opinion is this? It's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Titania, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says that it's korbanos that are like the korban Pesach, meaning korbanos that are time bound. You must bring a korban in this specific time. Those korbanos you can bring on a bama gedola. So let's say a korban tamid or a korban musaf. You have to bring it at a specific time. You can bring it on a bama gedola. You cannot bring it on a bama katana. But there's other kinds of korbanos. Rabbi Shimon says that you have to bring. You're obligated to bring. Let's say we were talking before about the tzibur makes a mistake. Let's say the Beis Din issues a ruling that's incorrect, and everybody does a particular aveira. So you have to bring a par helam dover shel tzibur. That's the name of the korban. You're obligated to bring it, but there's no set time that you're obligated to bring that korban. And Rishon says you cannot bring that korban, not in a bama ketana and not in a bama gedola. That's the kind of korban that you could only bring when we have a mishkan, when we have a beit hamikdash, but not on a bama of any sort. And that's why the Mishnah says psachim, only korbanos that are like psachim, meaning even korbanos that you have to bring, but only ones that are tied to a specific time. Those are the ones you can bring in a bama gedola, or you cannot bring in a bama ketana. But there are other korbanos that you're obligated to bring that you cannot bring on either. If that is even korbanos that you're obligated to bring, but they're not tied to a specific time. I'm going to read just a few more lines. We're nearly done. Right? The Mishnah says as follows: Ein bein Shiloh liYerushalayim. There's no distinction between the Mishkan that's in Shiloh and Yerushalayim. Ela shebeShiloh ochlin kachim kalim u'maaser sheni bechol aroy. In Shiloh, you could eat kachim kalim and maaser sheni anywhere that you could see the Mishkan from. So you could be far away, so long as you have line of sight to the Mishkan in Shiloh, you could still eat kachim kalim there. But beYerushalayim lifnim menachoma. In Yerushalayim, you could only eat kachim kalim within the walls of the city. So you, in theory, you could be outside the walls of the city and still see it. Not good enough for Yerushalayim, even though it would have been good enough for Shiloh. Kan v'kan, kachim kachim necholim nimekloim. But in both the Mishkan Shiloh and in Yerushalayim, kachim kachim, the higher form of holiness of the korbanos, you could only eat inside the walls of the Beis Hamikdash or the Mishkan. Kedusha Shiloh yesh acharei heter, kedusha Yerushalayim ein acharei heter. And another distinction between Shiloh and Yerushalayim is that when the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed, so then you were allowed to build bamos again after that, in between, right? When Shiloh was destroyed, before you built the Beis HaMikdash, you were allowed to have bamos. But once we built the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to build bamos anymore, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. You're not allowed to erect your own private altar. That's the end of the Mishnah. We'll pick up at this Gemara tomorrow.